You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Since 2001, the Philippines have seen a large increase in the murders and disappearances of left-leaning political activists. More than 1,000 people have been killed in that time. It's widely understood that the government and military are responsible. Activist and journalist Stefan Christoph was in the Philippines during the recently held election. He was there as part of a delegation of international observers whose presence was requested by local communities. And he joins me on the phone this morning. Hello, Stefan.
Hello.
Now, what was your role in the Philippines during the election?
We were sent to areas across the country where the political killings, as you mentioned, were taking place. So our role really was to be within communities that have been facing armed repression on the part of the armed forces of the Philippines, to be international eyes and ears within those communities. And that is not only in Manila, the capital, but across the country.
What community were you based in?
I was based in an urban poor area called Payatas, which is on the outskirts of Manila. And that's one of the many urban poor areas in the Philippines, urban poor areas that are growing in the past decade as poverty increases in the country. Basically, in the last 10 years, poverty has grown. A recent study indicated that actually 69% of the country self-identifies as poor, and over 50 million people in the Philippines are living below the International Poverty Index rating. So that's quite incredible. I was based in that community called Payatas.
So when you say poor, can you give us a little bit of a sense of what that community is like, what the level of poverty is there?
Well, Payatas is actually just beside the main garbage dump of Manila. So the people who live in Payatas, which there are thousands, make a living by sorting, collecting garbage, putting together scrap metal, taking recyclables, selling those things for a few coins. It's an informal economy. Beyond Payatas, the housing is rudimentary. There is also across the country many millions of families who live without electricity or running water, no educational infrastructure in terms of schools, or beyond that, even universities. Don't exist in large parts of the country. So that poverty really forms the backdrop and context to understanding the most recent elections in the Philippines in May.
Now, before I get to the elections, I want to ask you, because I understand there's been a large growth in Filipino social movements over the last several years. Is that entirely due to the poverty that they've been experiencing there?
I would imagine, yes, that's my impression. For example, in Payatas, in this urban poor area where I was based, just outside of 30 minutes from the downtown core, where, you know, you have people in Payatas making in 1 month what people in a downtown area like Makati, say, in downtown Manila, spend for coffee, right? So the discrepancy of wealth is growing. And I think because of that discrepancy of wealth, social movements are growing very quickly. You have large left movements across the country, legal movements, above ground movements, and then also, of course, in the countryside, you have the longest running guerrilla war in the world, which is between the armed forces of the Philippines and the left New People's Army. But in the cities, it's a legal above ground movement, and that movement is just massive. They have parallel education and health systems, and those most disenfranchised communities, which there are many, are extremely organized. So the community that I was in had its own daycare, health, and education systems that the government wasn't providing, but this national left movement, usually referred to as Bayan, which in Tagalog means the people or the nation, is organizing.
What kind of threats did those social movements face during the elections?
Armed intimidation, that's very common. Because the left has entered the political process, I wouldn't say that's the focus of the progressive organizing in the country, but it's one part of their work. They entered that process officially in 2001, and since that time, around each election, activists from different parties linked to these social movements we just talked about are being disappeared. Usually those disappearances are tied to right-wing paramilitaries or the armed forces of the Philippines. For me, in my mind, one of the most clearest parallels is looking at Central America in the 1980s, the situation in Guatemala and El Salvador, when there was U.S.-backed wars against progressive movements in those countries, the FMLN or the Sandinistas. In Central America. Today in the Philippines, of course, context is different, but I think it's interesting to look at that parallel because also the government of the United States and the government of Canada is strongly backing the last decade of presidency in the Philippines, which has been carrying out these killings.
What were your observations actually during the elections?
During the elections, one thing to note just about the whole context of poverty is that in the past decade, you've seen an incredible amount of privatization on the part of the government. So in terms of social services, hospitals, schools. But for this election, I just observed total chaos at a lot of the voting centers within the urban poor areas because the actual infrastructure of the election, which was the first automated vote in Asia, was privatized. So the whole infrastructure in terms of the automation and the machines of the vote was run by a foreign corporation, which is called Smartmatic. And this is a security systems and analysis company which has dabbled in elections. And it's based between Florida and Taiwan and Manila. So this corporation was actually running the elections and made hundreds of millions of dollars. But I'll just give you an example how it went on the ground. You had one voting center I was in where you had over 20,000 voters supposed to pass through the polls between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., and you had one technician provided for that entire period by Smartmatic, the foreign corporation. And then the public school teachers were forced, who are making a very small fraction of what officials from this private company, who were internationals, not locals, were making, trying to make up for all the differences and the malfunctioning of the machines, which did happen a lot, especially in the marginalized areas of the country.
So the machines would actually stop working during that period when all those people had to try to get through to vote?
Exactly.
Now, was there intimidation on people preventing them from actually going to voting that you could observe?
Well, I think that given that it's widely known that the armed forces of the Philippines is carrying out these killings we discussed earlier, as found by the Human Rights Commission at the United Nations and also by Amnesty International, the very presence of the armed forces in the Philippines, who are legally speaking not supposed to be within the voting centers, they were there, and even in the capital where the media presence is quite high, and so they're very visible, they were present, the military in the voting center, walking around, huge boots, huge guns, walking around the crowds. So I can only imagine what was being said or done when we were not there. I think that the presence we had was mainly to try to lessen that violence and also to try to make it known that, well, there are international solidarity activists watching what's going on. But even the fact that they're walking around in opposition, in discord to Philippine national law within the actual voting centers just speaks to this intimidation because everybody knows that it's the armed forces of the Philippines that is carrying out these political killings that's targeting activists from many of the parties who are actually running in the elections.
Now, you mentioned earlier that Canada has been supporting the Philippines, and I understand that they have supported the Philippine military over the years. What kind of role has Canada played?
Well, they have something called a Joint Forces Training Agreement, which means that every year Filipino soldiers come to Canada and receive training. That's confirmed. It's on the website of the Department of Defense in Canada. And beyond that, it's actually in breach of Canadian law because also if you read further, Canadian military is not supposed to engage with other military forces internationally, which are in breach of international conventions, which Canada is a signatory to. And UN officials, Amnesty International, many other organizations have directly found the armed forces of the Philippines to be in violation of many, many international conventions. They're carrying out extrajudicial assassinations against the left. And I don't also believe that the majority of people in Canada would actually support the idea of our military forces training a national army in the Philippines that's carrying out political killings.
What were the results of the elections?
I'd say the first result is this, which is that the outgoing president, Gloria Arroyo, who was in power since 2001, left office. So there was a huge fear that she was going to try to go against the Constitution and remain in office. And it was under her presidency that these killings really increased. She's the most unpopular president in the country since the U.S.-backed dictator Ferdinand Marcos, who was overthrown in a revolution in the Philippines in 1986. Beyond that, it looks like a politician called Noynoy Aquino, who is from a political dynasty in the Philippines, will be elected as president. On the surface, Aquino has spoken about attempting to change the political direction of the country in terms of halting the human rights violations. What most organizations and human rights groups in the Philippines are saying, well, that sounds good, but when you get into office, what we are asking of you, the new president of the Philippines, is to surface all the hundreds of people that are disappeared. There's a movement of the families and mothers and grandmothers of the disappeared who gather every week in the Philippines in different communities. It's similar to the mothers of the disappeared in Argentina during the dictatorship. So they gather every week to call on the government to surface their family members, their friends, and loved ones. So they're calling on the new government to say, well, in fact, if you're serious about changing the direction of the country, tell us what happened to our loved ones. But I think most people wouldn't be aware of the fact that hundreds and hundreds of social activists, union leaders, students, progressive artists, and journalists have been disappeared in the past decade in the Philippines.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us this morning, Stefan. It's been really interesting.
It's really my pleasure, Jane. Thanks so much.
I've been speaking with Stefan Christoph. He's a journalist and activist based in Montreal, and he recently visited the Philippines as an election observer.